Echo appears in bold, slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now sparks shoot out of a radio transmitter atop the revolving Earth, an RKO radio picture. Titles appear over a drawing of a tall tree beside a field. RKO Radio Pictures Incorporated presents Cary Grant as Johnny Asgarth, Joan Fontaine as Lena McClaidlaw Asgarth, in Suspicion, copyright 1941. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Carrie Danahy and Christopher Flowers, read by Carol Bakirita. For more about DVS, call 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dvs.wgbh.org. With Sir Cedric Hardwicke, Nigel Bruce, Dame May Whitty. Screenplay by Samson Raphaelson, Joan Harrison, and Alma Revel. From the novel Before the Fact by Frances Isles, directed by Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Was that your leg? I had no idea we were going into a tunnel. I thought the compartment was empty.
In a train, a dapper gentleman sits across from a prim young woman.
Oh, so sorry. I hope I didn't hurt you. Off a man in the next compartment smoking a vile cigar. Had to come in here. You don't smoke, do you?
No, I don't.
Oh, thank heavens for that. After last night, my head couldn't stand it. You understand, don't?
The gentleman's gaze roves up her stockinged legs to an open book in her lap entitled Child Psychology. As she stares at him through large reading glasses, a conductor enters.
See your tickets, please.
The young woman takes a ticket from her purse and hands it to the conductor. It reads Waterloo to Hazeldene, first class fare.
Thank you, miss.
The gentleman hands his ticket over.
I'm afraid you're in the wrong compartment, sir.
Well, it's a first class compartment, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Well, then I'm all right.
This is a third class ticket, sir.
The gentleman peers at the ticket.
What sort of line is this, selling third-class tickets at first-class prices?
I'm very sorry, sir. That will be 5 and 4 pence extra, sir.
You haven't changed my fiver, have you?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, then don't bother, because I haven't got one.
As the gentleman reaches into his pocket, the woman glances up at him.
That's the best I can do. Now, do you suppose the line would settle for 5 and 2 pence halfpenny?
The conductor glares.
No, I don't suppose it would.
The gentleman's gaze settles downward, then fixes on the young woman.
I hate to presume on our short acquaintance, but have you any change?
Well, I'm afraid that I...
She opens her purse.
Oh, there you are. That'll do. That stamp.
He takes a stamp from her hand.
Thank you very much. There we are. 5 and 2 pence halfpenny and 3 halfpence, 5 and 4 pence.
He hands the coins and stamp to the conductor.
Well, it's legal tender, old boy. Legal tender.
The conductor eyes him, then leaves the compartment.
Write to your mother.
The gentleman shifts in his seat and closes his eyes. Across from him, the young woman reads a newspaper. A picture inside shows the well-dressed gentleman posing with a woman in a fur coat. The caption underneath reads, Mr. John Johnny Asgarth and Mrs. Helen Newsham. The young woman's view lifts from the picture to the real Johnny Asgarth, who grumpily peers out the window, then falls asleep. Now a crowd of people, horses, and hound dogs fill a street. Johnny walks through the crowd accompanied by two ladies. All three wear hunting attire. A photographer approaches them.
Mr. Asgarth, may I? Would you mind stepping forward a little bit, Mrs. Fitzpatrick? Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Asgarth, please.
Johnny looks up affably.
I wonder if I could have just a little bit more of your smile.
Oh, no, not at this hour of the morning.
Three women approach.
Here he is. Good morning, Johnny. How are you?
We've been looking for you everywhere.
Simply everywhere.
Excuse me, if it's possible at all, would you mind?
Oh, of course. I'm so sorry. See you later, Johnny. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Come, Alice. Come, Jessie.
Thank you very much.
They're bright this morning. Now.
That's very good. That's very good. Now, could I have that little bit of a smile? You remember?
As a photographer readies his camera, Johnny turns his attention to a horse rearing on its hind legs. Its female rider calms the horse. It's the woman from the train.
I hardly believe it. Can't be the same girl.
She smiles under her hat's veil.
What's her name? Do you know her?
Yes, but lay off, Johnny. You've enough on your hands for one day. Besides, she's not up your alley.
To tell you the truth, I'm a little bored with people in my alley. Introduce me to her, will you?
Certainly not. She's a very carefully brought up young lady.
If you won't do it, I'll have to do it myself.
Oh, come on, they're going.
As they head off, the discouraged photographer walks away. A dozen hound dogs race off, followed by a line of hunters on horseback. Now, at a large manor house, the young woman sits in a living room reading. Her hair is pulled into a bun on the nape of her neck. One of the three pushy women from the fox hunt knocks on the window behind her.
Linda? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
The three women enter through a nearby door. Johnny follows.
Oh, may I introduce Mr. Aysgarth?
As Johnny holds out his hand, Lena removes her glasses.
How do you do?
How do you do?
We were just passing by and we saw you in the window.
And Johnny insisted on meeting you.
What?
Oh, well, I'm told the sight of a really eligible male is a rare treat in this part of the country.
Isn't Johnny terrible?
Simply too fantastic for words.
Aren't you, Johnny?
Oh, hadn't you better hurry?
Hurry for what?
You don't want to be late for church, do you?
Oh, did you all come to take me to church?
Well, no, but that is,
if you want to come.
Well, naturally, we'd love to have you.
That's very kind of you. I think I will come.
Good. And put on that saucy little hat you wore on the train the other day, huh?
I will. Excuse me. I'll be down in a moment. Well, we better sit down, girls.
As the three women take a seat on the window bench, Johnny picks up Lena's book. He leafs through it and finds a picture of him and Mrs. Newsham. A smile crosses his lips. One of his companions looks over at the clipping, and he quickly turns a page. Meanwhile, Lena rushes upstairs.
Where are you rushing to?
To church, Mother.
I've
changed my mind.
Oh, I see. Shall I go with you?
No, thanks. I'm going with the Barhams.
But Barhams? I thought you didn't like them.
I loathe them.
As Lena disappears into her room, her mother frowns.
Really? This must look extraordinary.
Now a stone church with battlements on a single tower sits behind a low wall. As a well-dressed family walks toward it through an open gate, Johnny comes walking down the lane beside Mrs. Barham. Behind them, Lena walks flanked by Mrs. Barham's two daughters, Alice and Jessie. The two girls mouth things to each other and leave Lena behind as they approach the church. At the gate, Johnny stops Lena and prevents her from continuing with the others.
Not really going to church, are you?
Certainly I am.
Oh, no, you're not. You're coming for a walk with me.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
I don't want to do it. I'll toss you for it. Heads you do, tails you don't, huh?
As the Barhams reach the church steps, one of the daughters turns around.
Mother.
They look toward the gate. Johnny and Lena are gone. Now on a hilltop, Lena struggles with Johnny. As a strong wind blows her hat off, Johnny smiles, gripping her wrists.
What did you think I was trying to do? Kill you? Nothing less than murder could justify such violent self-defense. Look at you.
Let me go.
He releases her and she glares at him.
Oh, I'm just beginning to understand. You thought I was going to kiss you, didn't you?
Weren't you?
Of course not. I was merely reaching around you, trying to fix your hair.
What's wrong with my hair?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that. It would have been extremely discourteous for me to bring the subject up.
Are you serious?
Well, of course I'm serious.
I may seem provincial, but frankly, I can't understand men like you. You always give me the feeling that you're laughing at me.
No, I give you my word. But your hair's all wrong. But it has such wonderful possibilities that I got excited. For the moment, I became a passionate hairdresser.
What's wrong with it?
Let me show you.
As he steps behind her and unpins her bun, she starts to button the top of her blouse.
Pat, don't do that.
Why not?
Because your occipital mapillary is quite beautiful.
What's an occipital mapillary?
He touches the hollow of her neck.
That.
You don't need to touch it.
Johnny repins Lena's braid to the top of her head so it sticks straight up.
That's good.
Lena shifts as he adjusts the vertical braid. He lets the braid down and pins it back into a sloppy bun.
It must be quite a novelty by contrast with the women that you're photographed with.
What do you think of me by contrast to your horse?
I think if I ever got the bit between your teeth, I'd have no trouble in handling you at all.
I suppose just you thought you had me under control, I turned around, neighed, and kissed you.
I think you've done enough fooling with my hair.
As Lena checks her hair in a mirror, she frowns and furrows her brow.
You don't look very good like that. You look more like a monkey with a bit of mirror. What does your family call you, monkey face?
Lena keeps her eyes on the mirror.
I still think my way was best.
As Johnny leans in close, Lena looks down at her purse and snaps it shut.
I must go now. I'll be late to luncheon.
Anyway, if my father saw me come in both late and beautiful, he might have a stroke.
Johnny drapes Lena's coat over his shoulder and watches her march down the hill. Smiling, he strolls after her. Later, they approach Lena's house.
Please don't bother to come any further.
Oh, well, I'll be back for you at 3 o'clock. Just a moment.
No, really, I can't come out this afternoon.
Yes, you can.
No, really, I have to make calls with my mother.
Liar.
Really?
Don't forget, 3 o'clock.
Lena passes an open window.
Lena will never marry. She's not the marrying sort. Now, she no need to worry. There's not to care for her for the rest of her life.
I suppose you're right, dear. I'm afraid she is rather spinsterish.
Well, what's wrong with that? Your maid's a respectable institution. All women are not alike. Lena has intellect and a fine, solid character. Come on, I'm hungry.
Lena turns away from the window, her eyes pained. She glances over her shoulder and finds Johnny standing right behind her. Wrapping her arm around his neck, she plants a kiss on his lips, then runs inside the house. In the foyer, she lays down her coat and hat and calmly enters the dining room. Her mother and father sit in high-backed chairs at opposite ends of a long table. Lena sits at the table's side.
Sorry, I'm late.
Nearby, a butler carves a roast.
Could I have some well done, please, Bert?
Yes, miss.
What kept you so long at church, dear?
I didn't go to church. I went for a walk. Thank you, Burton. With a man.
A man?
Yes, his name's John Aysgar.
John Aysgar?
Is that Tom Aysgar's boy?
How'd you meet him?
It's pretty he's turned out so wild. Rough luck on Tom. What's this, horseradish? No horseradish within season now. It's not of a bottle, is it?
Of course not, dear.
Oh, that's the real stuff. I can tell the difference at once. I can't stand things out of bottles. It never tastes the same.
Never, dear.
Why did you say that John Aysgarth was wild, Father?
Well, he was turned out of some club for cheating at cards, wasn't he?
Her father spoons up a side dish.
I don't know. I didn't ask him.
Or ought to have been. Something unpleasant, anyway. What's he doing down here?
Staying at Penn's Hayes. I shouldn't have thought that Lord Middleham would have had him there if he'd been turned out of a club for cheating.
Well, perhaps it wasn't cards. Maybe in a woman. He was correspondent or something, I believe. Or ought to have been correspondent. Good heavens, you can't expect me to remember every detail about everybody, can you?
Well, anyway, I'm going to see him again. He's calling for me this afternoon at 3.
Lena's father shoots a surprised look at her. A maid enters.
You're wanted on the telephone, miss.
Lena casts a serious gaze at her father, then hurries out of the dining room toward the phone.
Hello, Johnny.
You can't.
Yes, of course, I understand. Thank you for calling. I'd love to next time you come down again.
Lena sets down the receiver and stares off despondently. She raises one eyebrow, then stands and heads back to the dining room with her head held high. As she calmly takes her seat and places a napkin on her lap, her father watches her sternly. Later, Lena's hand leafs through the pages of a magazine. Her hand stops at a full-page picture of Johnny, who sits in a relaxed pose, smiling confidently. Her other hand sets down her reading glasses on the portrait. Later, Lena talks on the telephone.
Hello? Is Mr. John Aysgarth there, please? Oh, he isn't. Well, I thought perhaps... Are you expecting him for the hunt ball? This is... Well, it doesn't matter. I'll ring again.
Now, at a post office...
Nothing, Miss McLeod.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Well, I don't want to be a nuisance, but couldn't it accidentally have been put into somebody else's letterbox?
I'm sorry, miss. I'm sure it would have been returned if that has happened.
Oh, well, thank you.
Now, Lena's long, polished fingernail follows a column of names in a phone book. It stops on Aysgarth, John D. Lena dials.
Regent 0021, please. No reply. Thank you.
Later, Lena stands atop the hill where Johnny fixed her hair. Now, an invitation reads, "The master and members of the hunt committee of the Beauchamp Hunt request the pleasure of General and Mrs. McLeodlaw and Miss McLeodlaw's company at the Beauchamp Hunt Ball to be held at Hazeldene on Thursday evening, the 7th of March at 7:30 o'clock. Now, Lena sulks in a chair wearing a bathrobe.
Well,
Lena.
Her mother enters.
Lena.
Lena.
Hello, Mother.
It's 7 o'clock. Aren't you going to wear your new dress?
No, Mother, I'm not in the mood.
What's the matter, dear?
Night, my head's splitting. Mother, I'm not going to the ball.
Not going? You mean? What'll your father say? Perhaps some aspirin.
She touches Lena's forehead.
You haven't a temperature, have you?
I don't know. Yes, come in.
A maid enters.
Where's your aspirin, dear? I'll get it.
In my bureau drawer.
A telegram for you, miss.
As her mother heads across the room, Lena takes the telegram from the maid. Looking at it with a creased brow, Lena puts on her glasses. It reads, Miss Lena McLeodlaw, see you at the Hunt Ball. Don't forget to bring your occipital mapillary. Johnny. Lena gets to her feet and slowly steps to the center of the spacious bedroom. Clutching her glasses and the telegram, she smiles dreamily. Her mother turns to her.
Aspirin, dear.
What for?
Your headache.
Oh, that's gone. Tell Father I'll be down in a second.
Lena, I don't understand you.
As her mother leaves, Lena looks over the telegram with a wide grin and pockets it. She approaches an armoire where a plain dark dress hangs on the door. She throws the dress down and takes out a pale, frilly gown with black lace trim. Smiling, she holds it up to herself. A sheer fabric panel and collar are stitched above the low neckline. Lena's eyes shift in thought as she looks up from the modest dress and touches her neck. Later at the ball, Lena wears the gown without the sheer fabric. Three strands of pearls drape low on her smooth neck. She stands alone, searching the elegantly dressed crowd. As she steps away from the couples on the dance floor, a balding gentleman approaches.
I say, Lena, I say.
Oh, yes, Reggie?
What about our dance?
Why, of course. Poor Reggie.
Good.
Reggie leads her onto the dance floor. Lena's father and another gentleman watch them.
I say, General, that's not Lena dancing with Weatherby, is it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, by Jove, I didn't recognize her at first.
Why, how do you know, Miss Oldhunter?
A butler whispers into the gentleman's ear.
Why, General, there's somebody to see you at the door. This is General McLeodlaw.
I beg your pardon, sir, but there's a gentleman at the door who says he's with your party. He has no card, sir. The name is Aysgard.
Aysgard? Must be a mistake.
Johnny approaches them.
Oh, General McLeodlaw?
Yes.
I'm John Aysgard.
Well, Mr. Aysgard, I don't recall having invited you in my party.
Oh, how awkward. I thought you had. Otherwise, I should never have come all the way from London.
Well, I don't know what to say.
Well, I suggest you say something, General, before you embarrass this poor man to death.
On the dance floor, Lena spots Johnny and rushes to him, leaving Reggie behind.
Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Lena.
Hello, Johnny. Hello, Johnny. We were wondering whether you were coming.
I'm sorry I'm late. I believe this is our dance, isn't it?
Johnny takes Lena in his arms and sweeps her onto the dance floor. The General, the Barhams, and Reggie gape at them as they dance happily among the other couples.
Hello, Monkey Face.
Hello.
Hello, Monkey Face.
Hello, Johnny.
Grinning, the two dancers gaze into each other's eyes as they glide gracefully across the floor. Johnny spots a nearby door and twirls himself and Lena toward it. He takes her hand and ushers her outside. In the driveway, they rush past a group of chatting chauffeurs.
But we can't do this. Where are we going?
This is your car.
Oh, this is ridiculous. It's over there.
Good, come on.
They hurry into a nearby Rolls Royce.
Out the window before you catch cold.
Later, as Johnny drives the car, Lena smiles at him.
Have you ever been kissed in the car before?
Johnny.
Johnny what?
You mustn't joke with me. I'm no good at joking. I don't know how to flirt.
Well, I'm not joking. I'm serious. Have you ever been kissed in a car?
Never.
He stops the car and faces Lena.
Would you like to be?
Yes.
He leans in close and their lips meet in a long, tender kiss. As they separate, Lena smiles to herself.
Well, well. You're the first woman I've ever met who said yes when she meant yes.
What did the others say?
Hanged if I know anything but yes.
But they kiss you?
Usually.
Have they
what, Monkey Face?
Have there been many?
I'm afraid so, quite a few. One night when I couldn't fall asleep, I started to count them. You know, the way you count sheep jumping over a fence. I think I passed out on number 73.
Are you always frank with them like this?
No, not particularly.
Why are you frank with me? Because I'm different?
No, it isn't that. I'm honest because with you, I think it's the best way to get results.
Lena looks away and takes a deep breath.
I hope I'm not saying the wrong thing. But I love you.
No, you haven't said the wrong thing, Monkey Face.
Johnny starts to drive again.
Where are we going?
Oh, I don't know anywhere. I think I'm falling in love with you, and I don't quite like it. That's why I stayed away from you for a week. I was afraid of you. Well, I didn't think it would happen like this.
Neither did I. I saw an entirely different sort of person.
So did I.
I pictured it all rather conventionally. We'd meet at a garden party, and then he'd call on me in the evenings, and we'd go for rides together, and then after a while we'd... We're coming to my house. Would you like to stop for a drink?
Oh, no. No, I'm going to get you back to that ball as fast as possible.
Johnny gives Lena a sidelong glance. They pull to a stop in front of Lena's house. Johnny reaches over and opens Lena's door.
Get out.
She complies. Johnny scoots over and follows her out the passenger side.
Why have you stopped?
I'm sure I don't know. Now, come on.
As Johnny ushers her up the front walk, Lena gives him a dazed look. The butler opens the door for them.
Good evening, Burton.
I saw you coming up the drive, miss.
We won't be needing you, Burton. We've just stopped in for a drink.
Very good.
Shall we go in the study?
Lena brings Johnny into the study.
Now you sit down. I'll mix you a drink. I think you need one.
As Lena pours liquor, Johnny sits by her.
You must be made of iron.
What?
Well, how can you be so calm? Look at me. Look. Shaking. At least you could do is swoon away.
I know. I'm rather surprised myself. I think it's because for the first time in my life, I know what I want.
Johnny wraps his arm around her waist and pulls her in close. Their mouths lock in a tender, lingering kiss. As their lips separate, they gaze into each other's eyes.
Are you courting me?
I'm afraid I am.
This is a wonderful moment. Here we are in my home, the house that I was born in, alone and together. My favorite room. Do you like this room?
Very much.
Johnny's smile quickly disappears as he spots a life-sized painting of the general.
Oh, well. What are you doing here?
Johnny steps over to the stern-faced portrait.
Oh, I say, old boy, isn't that going a bit too far? He doesn't like me.
I know.
Lena joins him.
He doesn't trust me from here to there, do you? Well, you're right. Stop it before it's too late. Tell her everything you're thinking. I'm no good to her. I can only bring her unhappiness. Well, warn her. Speak up, man. It's your last chance. Hear him?
Very distinctly.
He's not exaggerating a thing, dear. It's all true, every word he isn't saying.
I love him, Father.
Did you see him jump?
I did.
Johnny draws Lena to his side and faces the painting.
Well, watch this one. Sir, I have the honor of asking for your daughter's hand in marriage. Well, what do you say to that?
Johnny pats the painting and catches it as it slips.
My, oh, my. You heard him that time, didn't you?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, poor Monkey Face.
Squeezing Johnny's shoulders tightly, Lena presses her lips to his in a passionate kiss. Lena looks off dreamily.
Do you hear the music?
Very clearly.
Well, let's dance. Let's dance before we...
Let's dance.
Lena puts her hand in Johnny's and they glide across the study, staring lovingly into each other's eyes. Lena's flowing dress and Johnny's long coattails sway as they twirl across the floor. Now, daylight shines on the McLeodlaw estate. Lena carefully makes her way downstairs. Wearing her coat and hat, she carries a suitcase. She sets the luggage down at the bottom of the stairs and hesitantly opens the large doors to the living room. Inside, her mother works on needlepoint, which is held up on a large square frame. Lena's gloomy eyes shift from her mother to her father, who sits by the fireplace reading the newspaper and smoking a pipe. Lena takes a deep breath and strides in.
I was just going down to the post.
Oh, could you stop at Marshall's and get me some more of this green wool? Where'd I put it?
Lena casts her eyes downward, then shifts her wistful gaze to her mother.
Oh, here it is. Be sure it's the same green. Better take it out into the daylight.
Yes, Mother.
Lena slowly approaches her father, her head cocked to one side.
Is there anything I can do for you, Father?
No, dear, there's nothing I want.
The general keeps his eyes on his newspaper as Lena looks back and forth between her parents. Pocketing the small ball of wool, Lena quickly leaves the room. As she closes the door behind her, she looks ahead with a sorrowful gaze. Her eyes glisten as she steps across the foyer.
Don't be late for tea, dear.
Lena grabs her suitcase and heads out the door. Now, rain streaks down a carved sign that reads, William Howe, Registrar of Births, Marriages, and Deaths. A nearby window frames a view of Johnny and Lena standing before the registrar's desk. Johnny slips a ring onto Lena's finger and they hug. Now, superimposed images show picturesque destinations as a hand smooths hotel decals into place. We see the tall palm trees of Naples, the oceanside city of Monte Carlo, the Grand Canal of Venice, and Paris's Notre Dame Cathedral. Now two hands lay an address label over the decals. It reads Mr. and Mrs. John Aysgarth, Wickstead, England. Later, inside an elegant home, a mover carries a trunk covered with the decals. Johnny, Lena, and a bespectacled man meet the mover at the bottom of the stairs.
Oh, that one goes up on the landing. Well, how'd you like it, Mrs. Aysgarth? Because if you don't like it, just blame it all on Mr. Bailey. He rented the house when we were on our honeymoon. He decorated the place. But if you do like it...
Oh, I adore it. I'm mad about it. It's wonderful.
Oh, well, in that case, you're talking to the right man, because I engaged Mr. Bailey, didn't I, Mr. Bailey?
Yes, Mr. Aysgarth. That's true, I must say.
Johnny, you're a genius.
Well, Mr. Aysgarth, I shall have to be getting along now. What should we do about the bill?
Will you drop it on that pretty little table on your way out, Bailey, old boy?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mr. Aysgarth.
Mr. Bailey sets the bill on a small table by the door, then gathers his belongings. As he heads out, he turns to the newlyweds.
Oh, and may I wish you both the very best of everything.
Oh, thank you.
Goodbye, Mr. Bailey.
Johnny, I never dreamt I would have such a gorgeous place. I'm sure you can afford it.
A maid enters.
Oh, I've forgotten your name.
Ethel, sir.
Well, Ethel, what about some tea?
Very good, sir.
What do you think of Ethel?
She seems perfect, but are you sure?
Let's go in the drawing room.
They enter an airy room with two sofas and large floor-to-ceiling windows. Lena watches as Johnny opens a small cabinet in the corner. They start to dance.
Well, where are we?
The Hunt Ball.
Where else?
Venice.
And?
And Naples and Capri and Monte Carlo and Nice.
And?
Paris. I beg your pardon. A telegram for you, sir.
Thank you, Ethel.
Johnny opens the telegram. His smile fades as he reads it. Lena notices his troubled expression.
It isn't bad news, is it, dear?
Oh, no, dear. It's from an old friend of mine. Stupid fellow, he wants £1,000. You couldn't spare £1,000, could you?
£1,000? What does he want it for?
Hang about. Probably because I borrowed it from him.
You borrowed it for what?
Because I was going on a honeymoon with the loveliest girl in the world and I wanted her to be happy. Was she happy?
Didn't you have any money of your own?
No, not a shilling.
I thought I had the impression that...
Oh, now, don't worry your darling little head about it today of all days. I'll take care of old Henry somehow.
Johnny, I still don't understand. Are you broke?
Monkey face? I've been broke all my life.
Why didn't you tell me? Every time I brought the subject up, you... Whatever made you take this extravagant house?
Well, I didn't think you'd want to live in a shack. A girl like you is going to come into plenty of money someday.
Wait a minute.
can't quite get this into my head. Were you thinking of my inheritance when... I don't know what to say.
Oh, now, darling, really. Isn't it silly to spend the best years of our lives waiting?
Why not be comfortable now?
Johnny, I'm just beginning to understand you. You're a baby. Oh, I know you didn't marry me for my money. You could have done much better elsewhere. But my income will never pay for all this. Never.
Well, what about your father?
Lena frowns and steps away from him.
Couldn't possibly ask my father. Why, even my mother. You saw how restrained she was when she met us at the station. Anyway, you wouldn't actually want to live on your wife's allowance, would you?
Of course not, darling.
Well, then. Answer me, Johnny.
Well, I suppose if the worst comes to the worst and there's no other way out, I suppose I'll have to...
What?
I'll borrow some more. I haven't touched old Middleham yet. He ought to be good for a month or two's housekeeping.
I think you must be mad.
Monkey face. Marrying you is the sanest thing I ever did in my life.
Johnny leans in for a kiss and Lena turns away. Ethel enters with a tray.
Come on, Ethel, give it to me.
Oh.
That's too heavy for a little girl like you.
Thank you, sir.
Get it clear off the table.
Lena watches Johnny with a bewildered gaze.
You better take that. Johnny, cake, Ethel.
Yes, sir.
Well, come along, get it.
As Ethel leaves, Johnny sets a napkin on Lena's lap and fixes a cup of tea. Ethel returns with a plate of sliced cake.
Thank you.
Lena watches Ethel go, then turns to her husband.
Johnny.
Huh?
There's going to be no more borrowing.
Well, what else is there to do?
You've got to go to work.
Work?
Yes, work.
What do you mean, put on old clothes, go out with a shovel?
Don't be flippant.
Well, what do you mean? I'm afraid you're a bit of a dreamer, darling. Let's be practical about this. Do you know statistics on unemployment? Do you realize that in order to be a plumber or a carpenter or an electrician... Darling, you haven't been around. They have to be apprentices first, even after that. Oh, darling.
There are all sorts of jobs, Johnny.
Well, I'm broad-minded. Let's have some tea and then talk it over. I can make out a list of jobs. Might be fun. Get a pencil and paper. Excuse me, then.
Johnny crosses to a bureau.
Can't do me, haven't you?
Hello? Oh, hello, Mother. Oh, yes, it's wonderful. A most beautiful house. And would you tell Father how badly I felt? Oh, he is? Oh, well, wait a minute till I tell Johnny. Johnny, Father's sending us a wedding present. Mother told him how happy I looked, and oh, I can't tell you how much this means to me.
Me too.
Yes, Father? Yes. Yes.
Well, come on, ask him when he's sending it.
He's coming right away by messenger.
Well, invite him over for dinner. Perhaps he'd like to play some golf someday. And if you can slip it in, just tell him we're in the throes of job hunting when he telephoned. Well, it doesn't hurt to impress the old boy, does it?
Johnny, really, you are the limit. How can you be so gay about something that you should... Yes, you should be ashamed of. Mm-hmm. What, Father? Yes, Johnny and I were just having a sober and comprehensive discussion of that very subject, and he has several ideas that the kind of job he'd like to do, and... several good opportunities.
Ethel walks in.
There's a messenger from General McLaidlaw.
Bring it in.
It's just come, Father. Hold on, do.
Ethel pushes in a tall chair covered with a cloth.
I think I know what it is. And if it is what I think it is, oh, Johnny, you'll be thrilled. Oh, it is. Oh, how wonderful. We've had them in the family before I was born. Father's had lots of offers to sell them, but he never would.
Ethel brings in a second chair.
How many more, for heaven's sake?
Just these two, sir. Oh, he sent us both of them. Oh, Johnny, these are Father's most precious possessions.
Oh, don't say.
Oh, these will be our first heirlooms, to be handed down to our children, and then to their children.
Yes, well, that's the thing to do with them, all right.
Lena reaches for the phone.
Father? Oh, you're so good to me that you make me want to cry.
Frowning, Johnny sits in one of the chairs, rocks it a little, and shrugs.
What was that? Yes, you made me very, very happy.
Johnny rests his feet on the other chair.
Oh, and you made Johnny very happy, too.
Lena motions for him to put his feet down.
Just a minute, Father. He wants to say something to you. Say something
very nice. These chairs really belong in a museum.
Hello, General. Yes, but really, shouldn't you have sent them to a museum? Well, naturally, we're thrilled. Who wouldn't be? What? A job? Oh, yes, Lena and I were just going into that. Well, I should make some opportunities. What? What are they? Well, I've just received a letter from my cousin, Captain Melbeck. Yes, he is a splendid chap. He wants someone to manage his estate. I thought I'd take the job. Well, I'm glad you approve. Yes, we must. We'll get together very soon. I'll leave it up to Lena, shall I? All right. Goodbye, sir.
Lena frowns at Johnny's smiling face.
That was a fib about Captain Melbeck, wasn't it?
Was it?
Johnny pulls a folded letter out of his pocket. It reads, "We'll give the idea your fullest consideration and let me know if you would like to take the job. Yours sincerely, George Melbeck."
Did you have this letter all the time?
I did.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because, dear, I never dreamed I'd be using it. Any more than I ever dreamed we'd be receiving these two beautiful chairs.
Now, outside of their stately home, Lena hops down off a horse. She enters the house wearing jodhpurs and holding a riding crop in her hand. As she enters the drawing room, she spots a stout man smoking a pipe. Lena stops short.
Hello. That's a nice place old John has got here. It's an old Georgian house, isn't it? I bet it cost him a packet to redecorate.
Who are you?
I'm Beaky Thwaite. You must be old Johnny's wife.
Yes, I am.
Oh, didn't he ever tell you about me?
Beaky? Oh, you're Beaky!
Well, that's what they used to call me at school. I happened to be driving by. I thought I'd just pop in for a cup of tea.
Well, I've heard so much about you, Mr. Thwaite.
Johnny told me about you, too. I ran into him at Newbury Races last week.
The races?
Oh, put my foot in as usual, have I? I mean, didn't he tell you?
Johnny has a job. He couldn't have been at the races. Besides, he's given up betting.
Oh, yes, I see. Well, don't you believe it. Not Johnny. He's a great lad, he is. You mustn't mind Johnny cutting up. That's what makes him Johnny. Besides, he thinks you're a topper. He does. I think so, too, eh, what?
Well, won't you sit down, Mr. Thwaite?
I don't see why not. Something wrong?
Yes, there were two chairs here this morning before I left.
Chairs? Disappeared, have they?
Apparently.
Were they expensive?
Yes, they were. They were museum pieces.
Says Johnny, he's been a death of me. Don't you understand?
No, I don't.
I bet you 20 to 1 that Johnny sold them.
Sold them? What for?
For money, of course. A fellow's got to pay his racing debts, hasn't he? And old Johnny dropped a packet of money at Newbury, I can tell you that. You know, these bookies don't trust a chap for long. Not a chap like Johnny, that is.
I don't believe you. I don't believe a word you're saying.
Put my foot in it again, have I? My dear, you mustn't take it so seriously. After all, it's Johnny. Wonderful chap, Johnny. There's nobody like him. But I needn't tell you that.
Couldn't have sold them. You wouldn't, without asking me.
Here he comes. Don't tell him I've said a word. Now, if you want to see old Johnny at his very best, just say something about chairs. He doesn't need more than 1 second to invent the most howling lie you ever heard. I wouldn't have missed this for anything in the world.
Johnny enters.
Beaky!
Johnny, how are you, old
man? What are you doing here?
I just bumped in to see you, old boy.
I'm so glad to see you. Why? Well, how's my little monkey face?
He kisses Lena's cheek.
Well, what's the matter, darling?
Nothing. Why?
You sure?
Your wife seems to be missing some chairs, old boy.
Beaky, your pipe's not lit. Let me get you a match.
Oh, thanks, Obie.
Beaky takes Lena's arm and they sit as Johnny tosses a box of matches to Beaky.
Here you are, Beaky. Catch.
Thanks, old boy. About those chairs, old bean. Missing chairs, old man.
Oh, yes, the chairs. Oh, well, I imagine the American came to get them this morning.
What American?
Oh, didn't I tell you about him, darling? Oh, how stupid of me. Well, he dropped by about a week ago. Friend of Melbeck's. I think you were out riding.
Go on, old man.
Anyway, he admired the chairs. Extravagant fellow. Offered 100 apiece for them. Can you imagine? Anyone would take that.
I wouldn't.
Oh, wouldn't you really, dear? Well, that never occurred to me. As a matter of fact, I told him you would.
Why didn't you mention it?
I'm sorry, darling, but I thought I did.
Well, that's all right. If they're gone, they're gone.
They're gone, all right.
Shall we
Change for dinner.
You are an angel.
Johnny hugs her.
Hold on a minute. You say he offered you $100 apiece for him?
That's right.
Well, let's have a look at the check.
He'll send it along.
I bet you £10 to a shilling he wouldn't dare let your wife pick up the telephone and ask old Milbeck or whatever his name is if he ever saw this American.
Are you implying that my husband is a liar, Mr. Thwaite?
Oh, now, monkey face, don't mind Beaky. He's only joking.
Well, I prefer jokes on other subjects. Are you staying for dinner, Mr. Thwaite?
Dinner? I'm spending the weekend unless you throw me out.
Johnny's friends are always welcome. As long as they remain Johnny's friends.
As they head out of the room, Johnny and Beaky walk on either side of Lena. Johnny looks at Beaky over Lena's head and irritably mouths something to him. Now in town, a man and an older woman look in a bookshop window. Lena exits the bookshop.
Oh, hello, Isabel. Good afternoon.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Admiring your display?
It's nice, isn't it?
Oh, after all, we have to do well by our only local celebrity.
Are you going my way?
Yes, I am.
How's Johnny?
Oh, he's fine. I just bought your latest for him. He's an ardent admirer of yours, you know. I don't believe there's one of your stories he hasn't read.
Lena stops.
What's the matter?
Oh, I just remembered something. Will you excuse me, Isabel? I want to make some inquiries here.
Certainly, my dear.
I'll see you for dinner soon.
Delighted.
I'll phone her then.
Goodbye.
A nearby antique store displays her father's chairs. Later, Lena approaches Beaky on the back porch.
Hello, girl.
Mr. Thwaite, I owe you an apology.
Good. I mean, what for?
Well, I'll explain to you later, but I'm afraid I've done you an injustice.
You've done me a justice? Oh, thanks very much. Hi, my dear. I forgive you from the bottom of my heart. You seem a bit hot under the collar. Not angry, are you? Don't answer, you are. Must be about old Johnny.
Would you excuse me?
Dear, you mustn't be angry with Johnny. It's a waste of time. Now, if you want to get sore with me, that's a different thing altogether. I annoy everybody, always did, but not Johnny. No, no, no. You mustn't really.
Will you?
Lena! Speaky!
Would you mind? I want to speak to Johnny alone. Could you?
Well, where is
you mean
everybody?
Out in the garden?
Please.
Johnny enters with a stack of boxes.
Hello, hello, hello. Don't move. Just stay like that. I must watch the expressions on your faces. Ethel!
What do you got there, O'Bean?
Oh, you'll find out soon enough, Beaky. This is a red letter day. Ethel!
Yes, sir.
Oh, Ethel, what have we to drink in the house?
Gin, brandy, champagne, and Pim's number one, sir.
Well, bring them all, Ethel, and get a move on.
That's good, sir.
Now, stand aside, Beaky.
Johnny faces Lena.
Do you remember that necklace you admired in the shop window in Regent Street? It's yours. And here, oh, no, that's for Ethel.
He grabs a cane.
Oh, Beaky, here's a little present for you.
What is it, O'Bean?
It's a secret.
Oh, stick.
There's the finest lack of the money. Goodbye, Beaky.
Lee O'Bean, thanks, O'Bean.
Hold on a moment, will you? Jolly, do you remember this?
A fur coat.
I saw the hungry eye you gave it last time we were up in London. It's yours.
He gives her two big hat boxes.
Thank you, Beaky. Here's some hats for you. Never did like your hats from the first moment I ever saw you. Remember the funny little hat you wore on the train?
Johnny, I don't understand. What made you do all
this? Oh, now, dear, don't be angry. If you don't like the hat, you can always return her. Oh, I've got a present for myself. Do you mind?
He rushes off.
I say, old girl, that's a nice stick. Strong, eh?
Johnny comes back leading a white terrier on a leash.
Oh, dog, eh?
That's right.
Old dog's fond of me.
Got him on the face.
But, Johnny, you haven't told us what this is all about.
Yes, what's it all mean, Obie?
Well, my friends, I have the pleasure of announcing that the Goodwood Cup was won today, and I have to back the winner. A 10-1 shot, ladies and gentlemen. 10-1, and I had £200 on it.
£200 at 10-1? Well, that's 2,000 quid.
Oh, Biggie, that's amazing.
What of it?
Well, the way you worked that out so quickly.
Well, what of it?
Well, you know, a little sum, math.
Sum. Oh, you pulled my leg, Obie.
Darling, what's happened to your tongue? Oh, I suppose you disapprove of my betting?
No, not with 2,000 quid in a lap, she doesn't.
Oh, come on, darling, smile. I know I've been naughty, but look, it's all for you.
Ah, I see. That's Johnny.
Come on, darling, smile.
Johnny, where did you get the £200?
I say, old girl, that's another very tactful question.
Where did you get it?
Well, you know very well there was no American. I got it for the chairs, of course.
You sold the chairs to gamble all your money on a horse.
Well, not exactly. I owed the bookies some money. It's an ancient story, but you know how bookies are.
What did I tell you?
You see, I got the £200 to pay them off. But then along came this hot tip and... Oh, darling, come on, give us a smile.
Come on, old girl. I know. You tickle her chin and I'll make faces.
Think that'll work?
As Johnny wiggles a finger under Lena's chin, Beaky puffs out his cheeks.
Do you see the glimmer of the smile of
them? No, not a thing, Beaky. Do you know any other tricks?
Here, I got something that never fails.
Well, come on, that's it.
I'll make a noise like a duck.
Uh-huh. No, no, that's not doing it. Shall I do this at the same time?
Yeah, try that.
Come on, dear. Oh, I forgot something. Darling, look, look, look. It's a receipt from a certain shop for a certain pair of chairs. Paid in full and they're delivered within the hour.
Tears roll down Lena's cheeks.
Oh, look, she's smiling.
I know, so she is.
Lena embraces Johnny.
Well done, old bean.
Ethel brings out the drinks.
I say, look, Ethel's done her stuff. What about celebrating?
You can always trust Beaky to say the right thing at the right time.
Oh, come on, Obi.
Smiling, they head over to the table laid with several bottles and glasses. As they approach Ethel, Johnny opens a box.
What are you doing with a pull at the beaker, Obi?
Ethel? A present for you.
He drapes a fox stole over her shoulders.
Oh, Mr. Eisgar. Oh, it's much too good for me.
Oh, not to you, Ethel.
Oh, thank you,
sir. Come in.
Oh, what will my young man think?
Oh, Ethel, don't forget the box.
Oh, yes, sir.
Oh, Ethel, don't forget my hat.
Oh, no, sir. Thank you, sir.
This is yours, Olga.
Thank you, Vicky.
This is yours, Obin.
Thank you.
Well, now for a toast.
Now, what have you got there, Biggie? Brandy?
Oh, just as once a week.
Well, you know that's not good for you.
Oh, what a bit.
All right, maybe just this once, huh?
Oh, what a bit.
Monkey face. I drink to the last bet that will ever be made by Johnny Asgard.
The last bet, old bean.
As Beaky takes a sip of his brandy, Lena and Johnny kiss. Beaky doubles over, holding a hand to his stomach. Johnny watches Beaky calmly as the man staggers across the porch and falls back into a chair. Lena rushes to Beaky's side.
Johnny, get some water, quick.
It won't help. I've seen this happen before. There's nothing much you can do about it.
She loosens his tie.
No, that's no use, darling. It'll either kill him or it'll go away by itself.
Beaky stares ahead listlessly. Lena keeps her eyes focused on Beaky as she grabs hold of Johnny's arm. They watch intently as a stricken man takes a few deep breaths.
Sorry, old bean.
One of these days it will kill him.
Now, outside the bookshop, a portly man puts a letter in a mailbox. As Lena exits the shop, Mrs. Newsham pulls up in a car.
Oh, hello, Mrs.
Ansgar. How are you, Mrs. Newsham?
Oh, what a lot of books. Do you really read them all, my dear?
Oh, I'm afraid not. They're for Johnny.
Johnny? Since when is he? Oh, detective stories.
Yes, he adores them.
So Johnny's settled down to the simple rural life, and it seems to agree with him. Abandoned all his vices, has he?
Vices? What vices, Mrs. Newsham?
Oh, such as betting at the races, for instance.
There is no time for that. He's much too busy with his job.
Is he? Then he must have taken an afternoon off last Tuesday. He was at the Merchester races.
Was he? How interesting. Good afternoon.
Goodbye.
As Lena heads off down the sidewalk, her smile fades to a stern frown. Later, she stops outside a storefront. Lettering painted on the window reads, Mel Beck Estates Offices. Lena peers in momentarily, then enters. She approaches a secretary at a desk.
Oh, good afternoon, Mrs. Asgard.
Good afternoon. Is Mr. Asgard in?
Mr. Asgard?
Why, no.
When do you expect him?
Well, I really couldn't say. Perhaps you'd like to talk to Captain Mel Beck.
Yes, I would. Very much, please.
The secretary opens an office door.
Mrs. Asgard, to see you.
Oh, come in. Mrs. Asgard, what a pleasure to see you.
Good afternoon.
Do sit down.
Thank you.
The mustached man takes her books as she sits.
Captain Melbeck, I don't want to impose upon you, but you're Johnny's cousin as well as his employer, and I wanted to talk to you about him. I'm terribly worried.
Yes, I can understand that. But on the other hand, I told him I wouldn't prosecute. Of course...
I don't understand.
I told him I wouldn't prosecute.
She stares, ashen-faced.
What on earth are you talking about?
How does he get away with it? What reason did he give you when I discharged him?
When did you discharge him?
6 weeks ago.
Captain Melbeck, I haven't a very keen sense of humor. If this... Tell me.
It's not funny to me, Mrs. Asgard. We had an unexpected audit 6 weeks ago, and the account showed a deficit of £2,000. And when I looked into Johnny's records... Well, I'm terribly sorry, Mrs. Asgard. He should have told you.
It's perfectly all right. And you say you aren't going to prosecute?
Well, not for the time being. I'll give him every possible opportunity of replacing the money. But, well, after all...
Yes, of course. Thank you very much, Captain Melbeck.
Lena stands and gathers her books. Melbeck opens the door for her.
Goodbye.
Now at the Aysgarth estate, Ethel opens the door and Lena brushes past.
Good afternoon, madam. Mr. Aysgarth.
Lena sets down her books and coldly rushes off. Ethel steps forward, staring after her. The terrier pants by her feet. Upstairs in her bedroom, Lena sets down a suitcase and begins packing. In the midst of folding clothes, she eyes her desk and walks over to it. Taking a seat, she pulls out a sheet of stationery, dips a pen into an inkwell, and begins writing. The metal nib skims over the paper, leaving words in cursive. Johnny, I am leaving you. Lena looks up thoughtfully. Her lip trembles as she continues writing. The note finishes with, "Never see each other again. I am sure you will be able to explain everything very smoothly to yourself as well as to others. Lena." Setting down the pen, she folds the paper neatly and slides it into an envelope. Lena dips the pen once more and jots on the outside of it. She stands, studying the envelope in her hand. Her gaze wanders mournfully and she tears the letter in half, then in quarters. Lena looks down at the scraps in her hands. She moves to the edge of her desk, her back turned to the luxurious bedroom. Lena's eyes shift warily. She remains motionless. Behind her, Johnny steps into view in a black suit, holding a slip of paper.
Then you've heard?
Yes, I've heard.
He walks up behind her.
I'm so sorry, darling. I'm terribly sorry. This telegram just came from the doctor. It tells how it happened.
She looks into his eyes, confused, and takes the telegram. Her gaze settles on the paper, which reads, "Deeply regret your father died early this morning from heart failure. Your mother wishes you to come at once." Lena presses her face into Johnny's chest, and he wraps an arm around her. Later, relatives gathered the McLeodlaws.
"And to my dear sister Emily Scudamore, I bequeath an annuity of £1,000 for the duration of her lifetime. To my niece, Miss Elsie Chilling, the sum of £5,000. To my two dear cousins, Robert and Jane Atwood, £500 each. The residue of my estate, my house, and all the property contained therein, I leave to my beloved wife, Martha, with the wish that she continue the present allowance of £500 a year to my daughter Lena. Also, to my daughter Lena and her husband John Aysgarth, I bequeath the portrait of myself painted by the distinguished Sir Joshua Nettlewood."
Johnny leans against the wall, his gaze perturbed. The lawyer removes his glasses and folds the will.
"I could do with a drink."
"I'll get you one, dear."
"No, don't bother. I'll get it myself. It's in the study, isn't it?"
Johnny enters the study and makes a beeline to the drink cart. Pulling the stopper from a glass decanter, he pours the dark liquid into a highball glass. Johnny checks the 2 inches of liquor, then pours more. Holding the drink under a seltzer bottle, Johnny adds soda, then carries the glass to the general's portrait. Johnny salutes it.
"You win, old boy."
He stands directly in front of the painting, raises his glass in a toast, and takes a drink. Now Johnny and Lena speed along a coastal road in their convertible roadster.
"Lena."
"Yes, dear?"
"Do you ever have any regrets that you married me?"
"Why do you ask that?"
"Well, it seems pretty obvious that your father would have left you a lot more than his portrait if you'd been anybody else but Mrs. John Aysgarth."
"Oh, so that's what you meant."
"You haven't answered my question."
"What about you? Have you any regrets?"
"Monkey face, marrying you is the one thing I've never changed my mind about."
"Do you really mean that, John?"
"Yes, I really mean that. I want nothing but to spend the rest of my life with you. And if you were to die first, I..."
His brow furrows.
"If I were to die first..."
"Listen, what about you?"
"I couldn't stop loving you if I tried."
"Have you tried?"
"Yes. Once."
"When?"
when I found out you lost your job with Captain Melbeck.
Johnny's face grows serious and his jaw stiffens.
How long have you known?
Since last Friday.
Who told you?
Captain Melbeck. I met him.
Did he tell you why?
No. Suppose you tell me why.
Oh, well, we just didn't get along. Quite nice here. Shall we stop and look at the sea?
Johnny's casual smile returns as he pulls over. Two woolly sheep graze on the hill beside the road. Lena turns to her husband.
Why didn't you get along with him?
Oh, I don't know. He's a bit of an old fogey, you know. I suppose my ideas were too daring for him. Monkey Face, I've always had the notion that the secret of success is to start at the top.
He chuckles, showing his pearly white teeth.
You think I'm talking through my hat, don't you? Well, I'm not. The way to make money is to think in a big way.
His eyes focus on the seaside cliffs.
Well, look at all this land, for instance. Look at the view. Now, why isn't something done about it? If I had 10,000 pounds, or better still, 20,000, I could start a development here.
As he stares transfixed, Lena forces a smile under her black veil.
All you need is 20,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Or 30,000. An extra 10,000 wouldn't hurt a bit.
Later.
You see, Biggie? This is the ground plan.
Wonderful, O.B. And then we could put the large hotel there, huh?
That's the idea. And down below here, we could build the beach hut.
Beach huts, O.B.?
Huts, Biggie.
Lena enters.
Hello, what goes on here anyway?
Monkey Face, we're organizing a real estate company. We're about to buy a very beautiful piece of land right by the sea.
What a view, what sun!
Biggie hands her a photo.
Then we're going to sell part of it at a profit.
Yes, but all this will need financing, won't it?
Of course.
Well, have you found somebody to put up the money?
Of course.
Who?
Me.
Lena glances to Johnny, then to the photo.
Oh, I see.
Well, the idea's mine, but the money's Biggie's. And the corporation, well, Biggie borrows against some securities he has in Paris. Then we issue stock and, let me show you, dear. Now, the company is going to be in my name.
Yes, but...
Look, darling, let me show you how simple it is.
He shoots an irritated glance at her.
Does Biggie understand it?
Oh, perfectly. I think.
Ethel enters.
I beg your pardon, sir. Captain Melbeck would like to talk to you on the telephone.
Oh. Thank you, Ethel. I'll take it in the study. Excuse me, Biggie.
Oh, right away.
Lena watches him leave, then turns to Biggie.
Now, Biggie, please explain it to me, will you?
Well, you see, my dear girl, I say I rather like this feeling of big business and all that sort of thing.
George, I keep telling you not to worry about it. I've got something on now that'll make it certain I can pay you back within a couple of weeks.
Well, you see, we buy up this land and then we sell part of it. That gives us a 100% profit in no time. Then on the other part, we build something or other.
Oh, yes, but from whom do you buy the land? How much do you pay for it? To whom do you sell it?
Well, that shouldn't be difficult, eh?
Beaky, isn't it about time you grew up?
I say, old girl, you're scolding me.
You need a scolding.
Do I?
Yes, you do.
Shall I go and stand in the corner?
He turns and moves to face the wall behind the door.
Beaky, you're not being fair to Johnny.
I say, old girl, that's a bit thick. Why, he's president of the whole Barry Fingerjig. Gets a salary, writes his own checks.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Oh, what's wrong about that?
Johnny stands in the doorway.
I say, oh, Bean. Bean's been telling me you're a bit soft in the head. Is that it?
Well, it sounded like that to me.
Oh, come now, girl. That's not very wifely, huh?
Well, Biggie, hadn't you better change for dinner? It's getting late, you know. Darling, Biggie's staying with us for a few days. You know your room, old man.
All right, Obin. Shan't be a jiffy.
Biggie leaves. Johnny stops Lena from following.
Look here. What right have you to interfere in my affairs?
Well, I wasn't really. I was only...
You were only what?
Well, I was only trying to tell Biggie that he shouldn't leave everything to you, because if something went wrong, he should take a little responsibility, too. It's not as if you were both experienced businessmen.
What the devil do you know about business?
Oh, very little. I was only...
Suppose Biggie had taken you seriously. You'd have ruined the whole scheme. You realize that?
Yes, but if it weren't any good.
That's my business, not yours. If I say it's good, it's good. I'm going through with this deal. I don't want any interference from you or anyone else. Is that clear?
Yes, that's clear.
Johnny escorts her up the staircase, then walks away coldly. Daytime. In the garden, Lena trims a bush with hedge clippers. Johnny stands nearby, watching.
Hello, Monkey Face.
Oh, you frightened me. I didn't see you coming.
Wearing an ascot and black coat, Johnny steps closer.
I thought you might like to know. I'm calling off the real estate plan.
Why? What happened?
Nothing.
Does Beaky know about this?
No, not yet.
Why are you doing it?
Oh, I don't know. Perhaps the land isn't any good. Who knows? Or perhaps I don't like the idea of risking Beaky's money. Or perhaps it's a stiff job and I'm too lazy.
Smiling, he puffs on a cigarette.
Are you still angry about last night?
No, I'm not angry.
Are you sure? Because I couldn't sleep all night. You'd never spoken so sharply to me before, and I was afraid that...
Afraid of what?
I was afraid you'd stop loving me.
No, Monkey Face, I'm not angry. And I love you very much.
He touches her hair. Johnny strides away, passing through an exhaled cloud of smoke. With a strained gaze, Lena stares ahead. Now, letter tiles on a card table spell D-O-U-B.
Every time I play anagrams, I can only make three-letter words. D-O-U-B, no such word.
Lena adds a T.
D-O-U-B-T, doubt. F-U-L, doubtful.
Beaky passes the cliff photo to Johnny.
Well, personally, O'Bean, I don't see what's wrong with the scheme. But if you say there's no good going ahead, well, doubtless go ahead. Do I get another turn? I still don't understand why we have to go all the way up there to look at it. Do I have another turn?
Beaky, I won't be responsible for calling the scheme off without first proving to you it's no good.
Well, O'Bean, if you say it's no good, that satisfies me. After all, you discovered the land. It was your idea. Hang it all, if a fellow has an idea, well, he jolly well ought to follow it up.
All the same, you have to go up there early tomorrow morning and take a look.
Well, why are you so insistent?
Because, as I told you, I won't be responsible.
Now, with the tiles, Lena spells mudder.
Mudder, there's no such word. By the R.
Lena replaces the first D with an R and spells the word murder.
Cold and wet.
Now, Beaky.
Oh, well, if we got to go, what town do we have to start? Now, if I had an ER, I could make that murderer.
Lena looks to Johnny.
The earlier, the better. I'd say about 7 o'clock. There won't be so much traffic on the road.
7 o'clock.
Lena looks from the tiles to the photo of the sea cliffs. Wide-eyed, she imagines two figures superimposed on the picture. One pushes the other off. Lena imagines Beaky falling to the water below, his tie flapping in his face. Lena's eyes close. She faints and drops to the floor, collapsing onto her velvet gown. Beaky and Johnny hurry over. Now, nestled in the satiny sheets of her lavish king-size bed, Lena stirs. Light creeps over her face, and her closed eyes squint. As her head turns to the window, her eyes blink open. Turning the other way, Lena's mouth drops at Johnny's vacant side of the bed. She sits up quickly, her normally pinned-up hair draping past her shoulders. Light gleams on Johnny's empty pillow. Lena throws off the sheets. Putting on a fur-collared robe, Lena touches an area of the wall and the drapes slide open. With a worried gaze, Lena opens the bedroom door to see Ethel topping the stairs, carrying a silver coffee tray.
Is Mr. Asgarth having breakfast, Ethel?
No, ma'am, he wouldn't wait. He said he'd have some on the road. He left about 2 hours ago with Mr. Thwaite.
What car did they use?
Mr. Thwaite's, I believe, ma'am.
Later, fully dressed, Lena hurries from her bedroom. Rushing to the bottom of the stairs, she pauses to tie her black coat around the waist and peer into the living room. Lena enters, heading to the card table, and picks up the photo of the sea cliffs. On the back is written, Tangmere by the Sea, 1,600 acres. Now Lena's hair blows wildly as she speeds down the coastal road in her convertible. Her gaze remains focused on the road as her leather-gloved hands grip the wheel. An aerial view of the sea cliffs shows the car slow to a stop. Lena looks out at the steep, jagged walls that rise hundreds of feet from the water below. Dark clouds slowly drift high overhead, and shrubs waver in the gusts of wind off the ocean. Exiting the car, she crosses the windy road to the precipice. She stops abruptly before the cliffside and peers over. Foamy waves swirl around the craggy rocks that jut from the water below. To her right, Lena spots tire tracks leading off the edge. Another serrated area of wave-splashed rock lies at the bottom. Lena squints as she scans the cliff bases. Another outcropping is washed over by an incoming wave whose white foam dissolves quickly away. Now in the car, Lena drives back down the winding road, her face troubled. Later, the car pulls into Lena's hedge-lined driveway, halting before the house. She slides across the seat to the passenger side of the car and exits. The shadows of leafy branches show on the sunny front door. Darkness sweeps over the facade. Lena looks to the upper story, then cautiously moves to the front door. Inside, the door opens and Lena slowly enters. A shadowy pattern from the window streaks across her face. Easing the door closed, Lena looks around warily as she walks into the house. She inches forward, pulling off her gloves. Lena freezes, closing her eyes. After a moment, she raises an eyebrow toward the next room. Creeping past the staircase, she slowly approaches the open door of the drawing room. Johnny sits before the record player cabinet.
This ought to do it. Put in the plug now.
In the corner, Beaky crouches at a socket.
How's that, Lee?
Lena's face brightens as she spots him. As he walks over to Johnny, Beaky notices Lena in the doorway.
Hello, girl.
Hello, darling.
As Johnny starts the record player, Lena enters with a stunned smile. Removing her coat and dropping it on a chair, she moves, entranced, to her husband and hugs him. Beaky and Johnny share a look.
Well, what's all this? I've only been away a few hours.
Seems like a thousand years.
Seems like that to me, too.
Shut up, Beaky. It was nothing.
Nothing? You're very close to losing my life. Do you call that nothing?
Lena faces Beaky.
Nearly lost your life.
You're very close to it.
Let's drop the subject.
No, Beaky, go on. I want to hear.
Well, there we were at the top of the cliff. I finally agreed that old Johnny was right. There was a little too much chalk in the soil. Well, I was trying to turn my car near the edge of the cliff. I never was very handy with a car.
With Johnny in the car?
No, he was a few feet away, looking over at the view.
That's hardly worth talking about. Let's all have a drink.
Go on, Beaky.
Well, I didn't realize I was backing the car towards the edge. But I was, by Joe, right up to it. If old Johnny hadn't taken a flying leap and grabbed the brake, I should be in Kingdom Come by now.
Johnny saved your life.
He certainly did. Came jolly close to losing his own, too.
Johnny, I can never tell you how much this means to me.
To you, darling?
Yes, it means a good bit to me, too. The old fellow deserves a reward. How about a night out? Spot of celebrating on me, Obi.
Oh, that's very kind of you, Biggie, but don't you have to go to Paris?
Paris?
Oh, yes, it's all my securities over there. I've got to go over and cancel all the arrangements for them. What? Why don't you come over with me?
Well, the cad seems to forget I'm a married man. Tell you what I might do, Biggie. I might drive up as far as London with you, take you up on that evening out. How about that, Monkey Face?
Yes, Monkey. Lena, do let him come.
Well, it seems to me that...
Yes, I know. It seems to you I should be looking for a job. Well, it seems to me I'd have much more chance of getting a job in London than I would anywhere around here.
Yes, of course he would. Do let him come, Lena.
Well, I don't see very well how I can stop him.
Hooray!
I said, pity he won't come to Paris, will he?
What?
Oh, by the way, did I ever tell you what happened to me last time I was in Paris? Very curious incident. I was walking down the Champs-Élysées, and I met the most charming girl. Well, I took her out and gave her a spot of dinner, and it wasn't until much later...
Johnny indicates Lena.
Oh, sorry, girl.
Beaky walks toward the door.
Nearly put the foot in it again, haven't I?
Now, a card in a rose box reads, "We'll be back soon, darling. All my love, Jay." Lena arranges the flowers in a shallow pot. As Lena looks up, Ethel approaches from the foyer. Two men in trench coats wait at the front door.
There's an Inspector Hodgson in the hall, ma'am. He wanted to see Mr. Aysgarth, but when I said he was away, he asked if he might speak to you.
Lena's grim expression settles briefly on the flowers.
Show him to the study, will you, Ethel, please?
Very good, madam.
Ethel returns to Inspector Hodgson. The inspector's younger partner studies an abstract painting on the wall.
Will you come this way, please, sir?
Thank you.
Ethel leads them to the study door, where they follow Lena into the room. As Ethel shuts the door, the older man addresses Lena.
Mrs. Aysgarth?
Yes?
My name's Hodgson, Inspector Hodgson. We're from the county police. This is my colleague, Mr. Benson.
How do you do, Mr. Benson?
How do you do?
Won't you sit down?
Thank you, ma'am. I understand your husband's not in,
No, he's been up in London for 2 days.
Well, As he's not here, I thought you might be able to help us.
Yes, of course. Won't you have some tea or something?
No, thank you. We've had ours. I believe you know Mr. Thwaite.
Yes, he's a close friend of my husband.
Well, I don't know how to put it quite. Perhaps it'd be easier if I showed you this. In this afternoon's paper.
Inspector Hodson hands her the folded newspaper.
Excuse me.
Trying to read it, she carries the paper at arm's length over to a table and retrieves her glasses. Sitting, she puts on her glasses and opens the newspaper. She reads, "Stop Press, Englishman found dead. An Englishman met with a mysterious end in a house in Paris." The inspector studies the woman as she reads. As Lena removes her eyeglasses and stares somberly ahead, Hodson nudges his partner with an elbow. Benson nods to the inspector and rises, moving to the window. Hodson stands and faces Lena.
I'm sorry. This is a shock. You see, we knew him so very well.
Sorry to have to do this, ma'am. But we're making inquiries on behalf of the Paris police. They found papers on Mr. Thwaite's person, which indicated he'd just formed a corporation with your husband.
At the window, Benson glances at the pair.
What do the French police believe caused the death?
This is the copy of a telegram we received from Paris.
He takes a folded paper and a small black case from his inside coat pocket. From the case, he pulls out a pair of reading glasses, then unfolds the telegram.
Thwaite visited the place in the company of another Englishman. Both men had evidently been drinking. On arrival, Thwaite ordered a bottle of brandy. According to the statement of one of the waiters belonging to the establishment, Thwaite's companion asked for the brandy to be served in large beakers. Apparently, as a result of a bet between the two men, Thwaite filled one of these beakers to the brim and drank it all. The other man was not present when the actual tragedy happened, having left the place a few minutes before. French police have not yet succeeded in establishing his identity. According to the waiter, who has a slight understanding of English, his name would appear to be Allbeam or Holbeam. I'm sorry to upset you, ma'am. But do you or your husband happen to know of any friend of Mr. Thwaite's who'd answer to such a name?
Benson approaches.
Perhaps Mrs. Aysgarth could enlighten us about this corporation.
Yes, I believe I can. My husband had planned a real estate development with him, and Mr. Thwaite had gone to Paris to dissolve the corporation. He apparently died before he could do this.
Thank you, ma'am. Any further questions, Benson?
None that I can think of.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Aysgarth.
Thank you.
As the men retrieve their hats, Lena continues staring off. The inspectors wait for her.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Lena gets up briskly. She leads them out and back to the front door. As Hodson turns to Lena, Benson studies the abstract painting again.
When does Mr. Aysgarth return from London?
I expect him this evening.
Would you ask him to ring me at the station?
Yes, of course. Goodbye, Inspector Hodson.
Goodbye. Benson.
Goodbye, Mrs. Aysgarth.
The two men exit, and Lena pushes the tall, stately door shut. She turns from the door, her form dwarfed by the spacious foyer. Daylight fills the room. The shadow from a grand window creates a spiderweb pattern across the floor and walls. In a daze, Lena returns to the study, clenching her fists. She looks around the shadowy room. Her simple black dress is highlighted by a sparkling jeweled brooch over her heart. Lena faces the portrait of her father, which leans against the study's bookshelves.
He didn't go to Paris. He didn't go to Paris, I tell you.
She stares wide-eyed at the portrait, then moves to the phone and dials. Elsewhere, front desk clerk answers.
Hogarth Club.
May I speak to Mr. Aysgarth, please? When do you expect him? He left yesterday morning. No, it doesn't matter, thank you.
Lena's gaze falls to the article beside the phone, and she picks up the newspaper. On her free hand, light glints on her wedding band. Lena gently carries the paper to a leather chair in the room. Sitting, Lena rests her temple against the back of the chair, the folded paper in her lap.
Hello, monkey face.
Lena's head gradually turns to Johnny, who stands in the doorframe wearing a gray three-piece suit. He holds a book and folded paper in one hand. Johnny steps from the shadows over to his wife.
You've read about Beaky, have you? I was terribly fond of Beaky.
Were you?
Yes, dear. I loved that silly, generous, good-hearted fool.
Did you?
Of course I did. Next to you, I loved him more than anybody in the world.
Next to me?
Oh, poor monkey face.
He sits on the arm of the chair.
Here I am thinking only of myself and forgetting all about you. You liked him too, didn't you?
I liked him very much.
Her eyes shift, glancing up to Johnny.
The police were here.
What did they want?
They wanted you to help them. They had a telegram from Paris, and it seems there was an Englishman made a little bet.
Yes, I know. The whole story was in the late edition. What else?
The inspector wants you to phone them. I thought perhaps you could help identify this Englishman.
Johnny sets down his book and moves away from his wife, placing his hands in his pockets.
What did you tell them? Did you mention the corporation?
Naturally. I told them that Beaky was planning to dissolve it.
I wish you'd left all that to me. What else did you tell them?
That's about all. I said I was expecting you back from London at any moment.
Johnny moves to the phone, picks up the receiver, and dials.
Hello? Hello, Wickstead Police Station, please. Hello? Hello, Inspector. This is John Aysgarth. I've just got home. Yes? Yes, well, I drove up to London with him on Tuesday evening. We dined at the Savoy. No. Yes. Then I saw him off at Croydon Airport. Yes. No, I stayed in London until this afternoon. At my club.
Lena's eyes widen.
Yes. Not at all, Inspector. If I can help you in any other way, be sure to let me know.
Lena spots Johnny's book entitled Murder on the Footbridge by Isabel Sedbusk. She flips the book over, revealing the author's photo on the back, a woman in her late 50s with dark eyes. Later, Lena and the terrier make their way up to an English cottage with a white picket fence. Inside, Isabel sits having tea.
Isabel, may I come in?
Oh, Lena, how nice. I was thinking only yesterday that I don't see half as much of you as I'd like.
Oh, how sweet of you. You know, I couldn't put my light out till 3 this morning. I was so interested in your last book that I had to come over and talk to you about it.
That's the most thrilling compliment I ever got. Come and sit down. Had you tea?
Yes, I have. Thank you.
I never knew you were such a murder story fan.
Well, neither did I until recently.
Did you really like it?
I couldn't put it down. I was completely fascinated by the way your villain...
My villain? My hero, you mean? I always think of my murderers as my heroes. But I didn't mean to interrupt. You were saying you were completely fascinated?
Well, when he enticed his victim across the footbridge, knowing that the bridge had been sawn through...
But he also knew that his victim couldn't swim. Don't forget that.
Well, what I want to know is this. Would you call that an actual murder?
Well, from a moral standpoint, there's no question at all. It is murder.
Oh, I suppose it is.
What does Johnny think?
Johnny? Oh, I haven't discussed it with him yet.
I should think he'd be interested. Same situation with his friend of his in Paris.
Lena blinks.
The same?
That brandy business is just like my footbridge. Now, if they get his companion, the question would be, was it murder or an accident? The brandy thing isn't new at all, you know.
But it's been done before.
Oh, yes, and in real life, too. I have it here. Richard Palmer got rid of one of his victims that way. A man called Abbey.
Was he hanged?
Isabel scans a shelf of leather-bound books.
Richard Palmer, where can it be? They got him eventually after he'd killed half a dozen other people. The fool got bored with the brandy method and went on with real poison.
He was a fool, wasn't he?
Maybe I put it under the teas. Or if he'd stuck to brandy, he might have...
She points to a photo of a bald man.
Suppose I ask my brother about it. He's the Home Office analyst, you know. Conducts post-mortems and all that sort of thing. I get all my neatest ideas from him.
Well, it really doesn't matter, Isabel. Please don't bother. It's really not important.
T-T-T.
Oh, run along now. I don't want to trouble you.
Palmer? Oh, now I remember. It's in your own house.
What is?
The Trial of Richard Palmer. That book about the brandy. Johnny borrowed it a couple of weeks ago.
Lena manages a smile.
Goodbye, Isabel.
Goodbye, my dear.
She exits Isabel's yard through the fence gate with the terrier trailing behind her. Later, back at home, Lena fingers through Johnny's bookshelves. One book is titled Famous Crimes. She turns with a distraught look and moves to a desk, opening its drawers. In one drawer, she finds the book Isabel mentioned, The Trial of Richard Palmer. Lena stares at the book as she lifts it out and opens it. An addressed envelope inside reads, George Melbeck, Esquire, 22 High Street, Wickstead. Lena takes out the letter and replaces the envelope in the book. Unfolding the paper, she holds it at arm's length. Lena searches her pockets for her glasses. She puts them on, then scans the page, her attention drawn to three words in a sentence. If you could be patient a little while longer, I'm sure I can find some other way to pay back the money I owe you. Removing her glasses, Lena answers.
Hello? No, he isn't in. This is Mrs. Aysgar speaking.
This is the Guarantor's Assurance Company. Would you tell Mr. Aysgar that there has been a slight delay in applying to his inquiry? But we have written him fully on the matter, and he should get our letter by first post in the morning.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Lena hangs up, shoots a puzzled look, and glances again to the letter. Morning. Gazing out of her bedroom window, Lena spies a dark-uniformed mail carrier pedaling up to the house on a bicycle. She crosses her arms and slowly turns from the window, her face weary. Ethel enters with a tray.
Good morning, madam.
Good morning. Are there any letters?
Just three for Mr. Aysgarth and a magazine for you, ma'am.
Ethel sets down the tea service and walks across the room. Lena, keeping her eye on her sleeping husband, moves to the tray. She checks the postmarks of the letters as Ethel opens the drapes. Two letters are from life insurance companies and are marked confidential.
Hello, Ethel. You here again?
Yes, sir. I brought you morning tea in the post.
Oh, hello, darling. Any letters for me?
Three.
Lena fills a teacup for Johnny, then carries it and the letters to him in bed.
Thank you, dear.
Lena sets the tea on a chrome bedside table. Johnny, wearing silky pajamas, waits for Lena to walk away. He then tears off the side of one envelope and pulls out the letter. While reading it, he glances over to Lena, who pours herself a cup of tea and adds milk. Johnny opens the second envelope and pulls out its letter. At the coffee table, Lena slides a cardboard tube off her rolled magazine. She glances around, then spots her glasses on a nearby table. Retrieving them, she looks into a large mirror over the fireplace and watches Johnny's reflection. He places the two letters into the inside pocket of his jacket, which is draped over a chair by the bed. With a sly look, Lena moves back to the coffee table.
Well, well, well.
Good news?
Look, had a letter from old Spotty. He's going to India. What a life. Says he wishes he had time to pop down and see us. Oh, dear me. Poor old Spotty. Well, well. Do you mind if I take my bath before you, dear?
No, dear.
Johnny heads into the adjoining bathroom and closes the door. Lena quickly shuffles to the jacket, withdraws one letter, and unfolds it. As she starts to put on her glasses, the bathroom door opens.
May I have some more soap on your face? This bit's nearly gone.
Yes, there's some in the cupboard above the wash basin.
As the door closes, she reads the letter. Replying to your inquiry regarding the loan of £500 against insurance policy, we regret such a loan cannot be granted. According to the terms of the policy, payment can only be made in the event of your wife's death. Later, Johnny steps from the bathroom in a robe and finds his wife by the window.
Darling,
Darling, you're not shivering, are you?
I have a bit of a chill.
What, cold in all this sunshine? Well, let me warm you up.
He hugs her.
My poor little shivering baby. How do you feel now? Better?
Much.
Good. Perhaps this will help.
He kisses her, then holds her close.
Darling, what are we doing tonight?
We're going to Isabel's to dine.
Oh, what a bore.
Evening. Two cars are parked outside Isabel's cottage. Inside Isabel, the Aysgarths, Isabel's brother, and a suited blonde woman sit at a candlelit dining table. A maid serves them.
Look, Izzy, let's get back that new book of yours.
Yes, I love it.
Now, look, you tell me the fellow comes into the room, locks it behind him, and then sits down and strums at the piano. And then somebody shoots him through the locked door. Got the idea? Well, it doesn't make sense. Why would he do that? Why would he just lock the door just to play the piano? Was he ashamed of his playing?
You see, I arranged it this way. A certain note on the piano was wired to a revolver concealed in the wall paneling. Then when the victim struck this note, well, there you are.
Well, I don't care much for that. You're slipping, old girl.
What's wrong with it, my dear chap?
That's too complicated. If you're going to kill somebody, do it simply. Am I right, Dr. Sedbusk?
You're right. Just as long as you don't get caught.
Do the wine, will you, Phil?
Yes, Izzy.
The blonde woman stands.
How would you do it simply?
I don't know, dear, but I'd use the most obvious method. The most important thing is that no one should suspect me.
For instance?
For instance, poison. Just use the first one that came to my mind. Say, arsenic.
Ah, arsenic.
The balding doctor slices into a Cornish hen.
In Gloucester, where we exhumed the body 4 years after, there was still enough poison even in the fingernails and the hair.
Yes, but... Did you get the murderer?
The doctor frowns thoughtfully.
See.
Phyllis refills his glass.
No, I don't think we do.
There you are.
Think of it. This very minute, there are hundreds of people who've committed murder, and they're walking about freely.
Thousands.
Do you suppose those murderers are happy, Johnny?
Oh, I don't know, dear. I don't see why they shouldn't be.
Fear of discovery, my lad. So long as arsenic leaves traces, and a bullet's marked by the barrel of a gun, and the tiniest hair of your head can be identified...
Yes, but it seems to me that by now someone would have discovered a poison that can't be traced.
The doctor glances sharply at Isabel through his Coke bottle glasses.
What about it, Doctor?
A very interesting corpse dropped in the other day.
Do let's hear about it.
No, please. Don't change the subject. I saw that look that passed between you. There is an untraceable poison, isn't there?
Nonsense. No such thing.
I'll bet you know, Doctor. What is it?
Not in a million years.
Oh, now, come. After all, do I look like a murderer?
That's an interesting question. What do you think, Izzy? Izzy can always tell by looking at a person's face whether he or she is capable of murder. Can't you, Izzy? Well, I don't want to sound conceited, but I usually can.
What about me, dear? Could I murder anyone?
Oh, you couldn't hurt a fly, Bertram, unless it was already dead.
What about Mrs. Aysgarth? She has a strange glint in her eye.
I'm afraid not. Lena hasn't the nerve any more than I have. And as for you, you silly thing.
Johnny.
Oh, look at the expression on his face. Trying to look mysterious, are you? Ah, you can't fool me. You couldn't commit a murder if you tried for 100 years.
Johnny looks down at his plate.
No, I don't believe I could.
He smiles. Later at the Aysgarths, Johnny slides the door bolt.
Johnny, you're locking up. What about Ethel?
Well, it's Ethel's day off. She won't be back until morning.
What about Cook?
What's the matter, dear? Have you forgotten? Cook's away on a holiday.
He flips off the light. In the darkness, Lena follows her husband. She stops at the foot of the stairs as Johnny heads up. He leans back and takes her hand. The couple moves up the stairs. Two sequin designs of leaf clusters sparkle on Lena's white coat, one over her right shoulder and the other across her waist. In the bedroom, Johnny's black tux contrasts with Lena's pale coat. Johnny flips on the light. He smiles at Lena, holding her arm with one hand and easing the door shut with the other.
Darling, you're shipping again. Do you suppose you're catching cold?
Yes, I think that's what it must be.
Oh, well, we have to tuck you into bed, get you nice and warm. Come along, take off your coat.
No, Johnny, please don't.
His hands freeze at her top button and he chuckles.
Well, this reminds me of the day we first met on the top of the hill, when you wouldn't let me unbutton the top button of your blouse. Do you remember?
Lena leans close, resting her head on his shoulder.
I shall never forget it.
Well, get undressed, old girl. What are you waiting for?
Johnny, I'm in the state tonight. I don't know why. I'd like to be alone.
Would you mind sleeping in your dressing room?
A distraught and irritated look washes over his face.
Of course I'd mind.
Lena faces him.
Please, Johnny, I haven't been sleeping very well lately.
I understand. You used to sleep badly when I wasn't here, and now you... All right, if that's the way you feel about it. Good night.
Johnny coldly exits the room. Lena stares after him, then brings her hand in front of her eyes. She swoons, reaches for a nearby chair, and falls to her knees, catching hold of the armrest. Her head wavers for a moment, then Lena settles heavily against the side of the chair. Now, Johnny sits on the edge of the bed, watching over Lena. Her eyes blink open.
Feeling better?
Yes, thank you.
A woman sits on the other edge.
Hello, Isabel.
How are you, my dear?
All right. I've been asleep all day, haven't I?
Isabel's brother gave you a sleeping pill this morning. Your nerves seem to be all upset. We were quite worried about you.
Cheer up. Bertram had a good look at you. Although he doesn't usually attend living people, I must say he's a very able doctor. He says all you need was a little sleep.
I'll run down and tell Ethel to fix something for your supper.
Johnny pats her shoulder, then rises and exits the room.
He's one in a million, that Johnny of yours.
Isn't he?
Do you mind if I smoke?
Have you been here all afternoon?
Naturally, ever since Johnny phoned. And I warn you, you better get well. If you leave me alone much longer with this husband of yours, my career will soon be over.
Flirted with you, I suppose.
Oh, flirted. Worse than that. He's worming all my secrets out of me. I suspect him of writing a detective story on the side.
Lena sits up.
What secrets?
Oh, he's always pestering me, you know. And I always swear I won't tell him, but I always do.
Did you tell him anything today?
Did I? Bertram was furious. Said he'd never confide in me again. But honestly, have you ever been able to deny Johnny anything?
Never. It was about that poison, wasn't it?
No, don't remind me of it. I'm ashamed and mortified and disgraced. I'm just a fool, that's all. If he writes a story on that one before I do, I suppose I'll deserve it. Now imagine, a substance in daily use everywhere. Anyone can lay his hands on it. And within a minute after taking, the victim's beautifully out of the way. Mind you, it's undetectable after death.
Is whatever it is painful?
Well, not in the least. In fact, I should think it'd be a most pleasant death.
Now lying back, Lena stares wide-eyed at the ceiling. Later, a clock's pendulum rocks back and forth. In bed, Lena rests, sitting up in a white bedgown, her eyes downcast. A single lamp illuminates the room. Her gaze rises suddenly. Downstairs, a shaft of light spills across the foyer floor. Johnny's silhouette appears and shows him turn the light off. His dark figure strides forward, holding a glass of milk on a tiny silver tray. Johnny slowly carries it across the dim foyer and starts up the curved staircase. The milk appears illuminated from within, its glow faintly shimmering in the darkness. The ghostly white liquid stands out against Johnny's dark form. He reaches the top of the stairs and carries the glass right at us. Back in the bedroom, Lena sits up, watching the door. It eases open and Johnny enters in his dark suit. As she cautiously watches him approach with a tray, Lena's eyes follow the glass. Johnny sets it on the bedside table next to her. Sitting on the bed, Johnny meets his wife's alert gaze.
Good night, Lena.
Johnny leans forward and kisses her fully on the lips. He stands and stiffly paces toward his adjoining dressing room. Flipping on the light, he enters and shuts the door behind him. Lena's eyes shift back to the milk. She furrows her brow at it, her lustrous hair draped over the front of her sheer white nightgown. Lena stares defiantly at Johnny's dressing room door. She takes a slow breath and squares her shoulders. In the morning, the glass remains full. Lena packs a suitcase.
You're still annoyed with me, aren't you?
No, Johnny, really. I still don't feel well, that's all.
And a few days at your mother's house would do more good than staying at home.
But it's not exactly that. Don't you understand? Mother telephoned me and...
She got on that telephone awfully early, it seems to me.
Well, Mother gets up early and she's lonely down there. And I happened to mention that I was a bit nervy. And before I knew it, I'd agreed to spend a few days with her.
All right. I'll run down and get the car ready.
Oh, no, don't. I'll drive myself.
I prefer to drive you.
A trail of smoke snakes upward from Johnny's cigarette. He strides out. Later, the car speeds along the coastal road. Johnny scowls as he drives. Lena sits next to him. A snug, hood-like hat frames her troubled face. Johnny, noticing Lena's door ajar, reaches over and closes it. Through the windshield, Lena watches the cliffside road whisk by the car. She tentatively glances to the speedometer, which reads 40 miles an hour. Lena casts a worried glance at the road's edge, then to Johnny, who drives stone-faced. His grip tightens on the wheel as Lena looks down again. The speedometer now reads 50 miles an hour. Its glass face reflects the passing blur of the landscape. Lena looks over again at the steep cliffs just a few feet to the car's left. Her face becomes more terrified as the road rushes by faster and faster. The speedometer now reads over 60 miles an hour. As the wind whips through Johnny's jet black hair, the car speeds toward a fork in the road.
I think I'll take the shortcut.
Johnny veers to the left, and Lena's door flies open, revealing the cliff edge. As Johnny reaches toward her, Lena grabs his arm.
Johnny! Johnny!
She frantically struggles with his arm. The car halts.
Lena!
As Lena races away, Johnny gives chase and seizes her by the wrists.
Stop it, you little fool! Stop it! I've had enough. How much do you think a man can bear? Listen to me. You turn me out of your room, you go running off to your mother's, and now you shrink away from me as though you hated me. You're my wife, Lena.
I know.
You almost killed us both back there. Because you had to pull away even when I was reaching over to save you from falling out of the car.
As Lena calms, Johnny tosses down her wrists.
Well, you don't have to put up with me anymore.
Johnny, where are you going?
First, I'm taking you to your mother's.
And then what?
And don't worry, I won't bother you again.
As he moves away, she grabs him.
Johnny, you mean you're going to... Johnny, why were you asking Isabel those questions about the poison? What were you planning to do with it? Johnny, you were going to kill yourself.
She buries her face into Johnny's chest.
Yes, but I saw that was a cheap way out. I'm going back to see it through, prison term and everything.
Prison, you mean Melbeck, that money you took?
I can't pay it back. I made the last attempt to raise the money when I went away with Beaky.
Paris?
I went to Liverpool. I tried to borrow on your insurance, but it didn't work.
You mean you were in Liverpool when Vicky... Then you didn't go to Paris.
Of course not. You think I'd have let some idiot give poor old Vicky that brandy if I had?
Johnny, if I'd only known... This is as much my fault as yours. I was only thinking of myself, not what you were going through. If I'd been really close to you, you could have confided in me. But you were afraid to. You were ashamed to come to me. Oh, if I'd only understood. Oh, Johnny... But it'll be different now. We'll make it different.
People don't change overnight, Lena. I'm no good.
Let's turn back. Johnny, let's go home and see it all through together.
No, it won't work. I'm driving you on to your mother's.
It will work. I know it will. Johnny, please.
This isn't your problem, Lena.
But it is. You can't shut me out. Johnny, turn the car around and let's go home. Please, Johnny, please.
No, Lena, no.
They return to the car.
My darling.
Now, under the cloudy sky, the distant car starts forward again down the dusty road. The roadster makes a broad circle and heads back the way it came. Light shines down on the backs of their heads and shoulders as Johnny places his arm around Lena. The car speeds away in a trailing cloud of dust. Fade to black. Now words appear over an illustration of concentric triangles. The end. A logo of an upside-down triangle and lightning bolt appears. RKO Radio Pictures. Cast of characters. Cary Grant as Johnny. Joan Fontaine as Lena. Sir Cedric Hardwicke as General McLeodlaw. Nigel Bruce as Beaky. Dame May Whitty as Mrs. McLeodlaw. Isabel Jeans as Mrs. Newsham. Heather Angel as Ethel, Maid. Oriole Lee as Isabel Sidbusk. Reginald Sheffield as Reggie Weatherby. Leo G. Carroll as Captain Melbeck.